This programme was funded with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee.
Hello, my name is Tom Brady and welcome to the series Living with the Border. The border cut off natural hinterlands, separated communities and neighbours that had lived together for years. While the hardships people suffered as a result of the border have been well documented, these programmes intend to look at the funnier side of living along the border. My guest today is John Mulligan, Newton Balregan, Dundalk, a former principal of Sheila National School, Hackbus Cross, close to the Armagh border. You are welcome to the programme, Joe. You are enjoying retirement from a long teaching career, working for most of it along the border. How did it all begin?
Well, thanks for having me, Tom. I suppose it is a long number of years, all right, 40 and all, but they weren't all along the border. However, they all seem to have passed so quickly. And so much has happened during those years. On reflection, it's been very exciting and it's an interesting period to have lived through. I'm a native of Dundalk. Spent my youth playing and wandering in the fields along the Avenue Road and the streets along the Quay and Clunenda, Alphonsus Phyllis. Dundalk in those days, and I know we're going on to talk about life on the border, but in those days Dundalk was a very different town. I remember Lipton's grocery store and the Holman Colonial store, as well as Hanratty's, my grandfather's grocery and public house on Grassley Street. Cross-border trade was a huge in those early years, and the market day I seem to remember was in Dundalk on a Monday and then in Newry on a Thursday. And that was a big part of cross-border life and community life around the town. I began teaching in 1971 and I just turned 20, and my first position was in the De La Salle Primary School in Castletown in Dundalk. It was the heartland of the Clannagale Football Club and still is, and many old clans I passed through my hands in the inter-schools football. Pupils came from Castletown, Dowdles Hill, the Laurels, McSweeney Street and further afield. I was 8 years there before moving to the parish of Creggan Upper and as principal of Sheila National School. So that was my beginning, Tom.
When did you start teaching in Sheila National School?
Well, as I said, Tom, I came to Sheila National School on the 1st of September 1979. And it was a great day for me. I was delighted to go down there. And Sheila was, and still is, a unique place. And the people from Sheila, they don't call it Sheila, they call it Sheila. And when I went down first, I thought that the reason that they were calling it Sheila was because they had a country accent. But they weren't. Because when you translate Sheila into the Irish version of the word, it's Sheilock. And as far as I could ascertain, Sheilock is the sally land at the edge of a bog. And there's lots of bog around Sheila, down around Drumacle Wall and all of those places in North Louth, South Armagh. So anyway, it spans border and county and national borders. Sheila is one of five schools in the parish of Creggan. There's four churches in the parish and one Church of Ireland. Would you like me to tell you a little bit about the school?
Yeah, oh yeah, continue on. Yeah.
Okay. There had been two schools in Sheila, in the Sheila area, for over 80 years. But then emigration took its toll, falling numbers in Court Band School, Rassen, it was amalgamated with Sheila, and that was Sheila Old School now on the Chapel Hill, that's where the church now stands. The two schools were amalgamated there, and then afterwards a new school building was built in 1962 further back from the border, down on the turnpike with the Castle Blaney Road. So that was the school that I went to as principal. John and Greta Agnew, as well as Pat O'Neill, were teachers in Sheila Old School. And in 1962, Court Band School and Sheila were amalgamated into the new school, and the principal at that time was John Agnew, and his brother-in-law, Con Short, was the vice principal. Now, also at that time in the school, you would have had Pat O'Neill and Seamus Tiernan. Con was a big, famous person in GAA circles, and an historian of all kinds as well. His son Frank was later a principal in Kilcurry National School, and his daughter Constance is an artist in County Louth. She's affiliated to the Town Centre as far as I know. So anyway, that was the background of the school. In 1979, when Con retired, I replaced him as principal in Sheila. So it was in 1979, I went to school, went to Sheila, you know, for the first time. Con Short was president of the GAA in the 70s, and Pat O'Neill later left Sheila and went to Knockbridge as principal over there. And he was replaced in Sheila by Seamus Tiernan. All of those men have long since retired. Some of them have gone to their home. In 1979, I replaced Con as principal in Sheila National School. Now, at this stage, Sheila School was 20 years old and it was in need of refurbishment. In fact, it needed major refurbishment. The community spirit then was very strong, and there was a project undertaken which was to run over the next 20 years through recession and troubles until finally we achieved a new, fully refurbished, modern, state-of-the-art school. It was complete with internet and a closed network system which was way before its time, with five local schools. The school then became the centre of the community. We won many awards, Tom. The students were taken to IBM in Dublin and they did a fact-finding trips up there to those. Dublin City University came down and did a project on online learning using the school as a model, and that was 20 years ago, way before Facebook or Tinder or Model or Twitter or any of those things. So it was an achievement for the community to do that, and most of it was done by hard graft and fundraising. In 2011, I called it a day, and I know I'm running on a little bit, but you did ask me when did I start teaching. I taught from 1979 till 2011, and I called it a day then and retired. And one of my past pupils, Roisin Fee, took over the reins as principal with the task of taking the school into the next era. I'm still an interested observer, however, in education, and I assist with IT projects, and I do a little bit of online training of young teachers from time to time. No. So that's the beginning of when I went to Sheila.
Did you find a difference between the town and country environment when you moved to Sheila?
Well, of course I did. When I was being reared myself as a young lad, I was in the country. As I mentioned earlier, the Avenue Road in those times was country. We played on haystacks and we explored in fields. So even though I came on and the town came on and I worked in the town environment for quite a number of years, when I went back down to Sheila, I understood most of what was going on in it. They were all small farms and homesteads. There was many differences between the town and the rural environment. The free bus scheme was a lifeline for the school at the time, because the school was an amalgamation. Part of the deal was that a free bus was supplied to take the children to and from school in the mornings and in the evenings. As part of getting to know the area and the children, I decided the only one way to do it was to travel on the school bus. So I used to go onto the school bus in the morning. I did this for about 3 months when I went down there first. I travelled to school on the school bus with the bus driver and the children each morning for about 2 months. And I got to know the parents and the pets and the dogs and the cats and the calves and all the houses. And it was fierce crack, but it was a great time, because children in the country area in those days, they were so innocent and so nice. They would talk to you about what they had for their breakfast. They would tell you everything. I saw it firsthand how the people were surviving, and surviving was really what they were doing. In the country, life depended greatly on your neighbours, and still does to this day. Everyone was closely intertwined with each other. That was the first thing I noticed. In the area, there was poor infrastructure, poor roads, poor telecoms, no internet, and more importantly, no industry. And then in the 1980s, the recession hit. The neglect of the border regions, which had been going on for years, got suddenly worse, and that brought its own problems. Any frontier between two countries will involve an element of smuggling, dependent on the subsidies and tariffs from time to time that involved. Different items were valuable at different times. It went from butter and flour and tea and sugar and tobacco and sweets. And then, of course, at Halloween, the fireworks. All of us who come from Dundalk have aunts, uncles, grandparents who went down to Newry, went to Fork Hill, went across Madeleine and took the contraband over in the back of the car. And the customs would close a blind eye a lot of the time because they knew the situation, what was going on. But on a larger scale, it involved pigs and cattle and farm machineries and supplies. So there was two different levels going on. But people, you have to remember, were making a living any way they could, and there was a lot of poverty around. An example of this was, in those times, a factory worker would make about £10 a week, and he'd work for 50 hours. Now, you could buy 20 piglets at a Blaney fair, and you could smuggle them north in a trailer and sell them for a £2 profit each. That's four times your weekly wage for one trip. So people were, well, they were tempted. And it was the way in that some pigs, it said, knew their own way over the border and back again. They knew where they were going. But this is the way of life in real terms for real people living on border areas. And it came from deprivation, small farms, trying to eke out a living and trying to make a shilling any way they could. I can't honestly say that there was much deviousness or wrong with that system, considering the social atmosphere that was around. So yes, there was quite a few differences between the town and country. The big differences I found was in the generosity and the genuine nature of the people and the closeness they were to their children and the openness of children. That was one thing I would say.
Now, we'll take a break now for a song. An appropriate song would be "The Village Where I Went to School" by Foster and Allen.
I've heard people say, funny how life has slipped away. But I knew that I'd come back someday to the village where I went to school. In the corner of a field, there's a big old tree. It's been growing there before you and me. I carved my name in the village where I went to school. I would sit in the class on a winter's morn. Sometimes I'd wish I'd never been born. In second-hand clothes that were tattered and torn, in the village where I went to school. Where are they now? Some went over the sea. Odd ones came back to the village like me. There's a smell of bread from the baker's shop and the little store where we bought our pot. The coal man's old horse, he goes clippity-clop through the village where I went to school. Childhood memories, like the time when all the school caught fleas, and the orchard where we climbed the trees, in the village where I went to school. Now I've come back home and I reminisce. I look around at the things I missed as the sun comes up.
You began as principal in Sheila at the height of the Northern Troubles. Did the Troubles impact the daily life of the school?
Well, Tom, that's quite a question, all right. There's a lot of things that happened during the Troubles that were particular to the Sheila area, the South Armagh area, and it got very, very bad press for good reasons and for bad in the national media. But what differentiated the Irish Northern Ireland border area from most other border regions in Europe at this time was the highly charged political situation. I think probably, well, I went down to Sheila in the middle of the Troubles when they're at their height, but in answer to your question, Tom, I think the three wise monkeys are relevant here. They see no evil, they hear no evil, and they do no evil. And that was the attitude we had within the school. We kept our heads down We tried to give the children a balanced view of everything and to carry on through the troubles. I said earlier I replaced Con Short in 1979 as principal in Sheila. This was the same year as the Narrowwater Massacre. It was 3 days after the 27th of August that I began teaching in Sheila. Now, those of you who don't remember the Narrowwater Massacre, the attack happened on the same day that the IRA assassinated Lord Louis Mountbatten over in Sligo. He would have been an uncle of Prince Charles and the royal family. It was the deadliest attack on the British Army during the Troubles, the Parachute Regiment's biggest loss since World War II. The 2nd Battalion of the British Parachute Regiment had 16 casualties. The 1st Battalion of the Parachute Regiment were the ones that were responsible for Bloody Sunday in January 1972, and that's what started off the Troubles. So there was a connection. Those 14 unarmed protesters on Bloody Sunday shot dead. And the IRA made it clear it was targeting British paratroopers from that day forward because of Bloody Sunday. That was my introduction down to Sheila. The two things coincided. It was the same thing. It was a very highly charged political agenda, and it was imposed, as I said earlier, on an impoverished and neglected community, not just in South Armagh, but as far north as Derry, Enniskillen, Clonus, the whole way along the border. And the people who lived in those areas had been neglected since 1922. So it was a rife ground for political agendas to be achieved. You see, it was all intertwined with the border economy, the closeness of a country community, small rural dwellings and farms trying to make a living, and the national pride in Ireland's music, history and heritage. And we all had such a pride in our flag, our national anthem, our history, our culture and our heritage, and yet it became all entwined up with the struggle for a political agenda. So it was a tricky thing. On occasion, there was interaction between the locals and the army listening posts in Crossbit Lane and Drumacca Wall, but these tended to happen at weekends more often than not. Soldiers weren't liked around the area. The locals kept their heads down and they carried on with their daily lives as best they could. In 1981, after the death of Bobby Sands, there was increased activity in the area, and it involved attacks on army posts and road checkpoints by undercover units from both sides in the struggle. Daily life in the school wasn't really disturbed, but sometimes an army patrol might have wandered south, or there might have been a checkpoint set up at short notice that affected the journey to and from school. But it was never anything more than that. On one occasion, there was an incident when a local man, the Argentinian conflict was going on around the same time, a local man hoisted a large Argentinian flag in front of the garden to annoy the British troops who were looking down them. And of course the British troops at that time could only put up with that for about a half a day, and they sent a patrol over to take down the flag. And as soon as they got the flag down, the Irish soldiers landed to chase the British soldiers back across the border again. But there was devilment in that without being any harm. On another occasion, there was a young British soldier got lost on patrol, and he hijacked a local lady's car, and she was in it. And he demanded that she drive him back north of the border. And her story was that she was more terrified than the soldier, but he was scared out of his head in case he'd be found south of the border on his own. So there were incidents like that. Helicopters were a constant noise in the area. And generally we knew when trouble was on by the way the helicopters appear. But the trouble was removed from the daily routine, as I said, of the concerts and the football and the inter-schools basketball and other events in the school. Because I'd spent some time in Dundalk, my colleagues around Dundalk, I knew who were in charge of the different schools, and we arranged football matches and inter-school matches and basketball matches. We tried to give the children an oasis from what some of them must have been experiencing outside the school. And I think all the parents from all stations of society down there appreciated that. Once the children came to school, they were at school. They were there to play football and basketball, and it was a break from the everyday living for them. With regard to the everyday running of the school, we were following a different agenda. The only way that we felt in school that the children could be helped was to empower them and to educate them into a world that was changing so fast that events would overtake the troubles, which in fact, in the end, actually happened. And when peace eventually arrived, the children who were now young adults had become empowered to bring employment and industry into the area for the next generation to enjoy. Many of them went to third level education. They're employed in business and commerce or industry, and the small farm is now an addition rather than a necessity. And I think the success of the school down through those troubles was to break the children out of the bubble that they existed in. And it let them see, particularly through the use of internet and so on, it let them see and get a window onto the big world. But traditions die hard, and maybe traditions should be, in some cases, held onto. The community element of the area is still very strong there. People are close, they look out for each other, and there has been terrible grief and heartache in the community, there's no doubt about it. When the Good Friday Agreement finally came in 1988, it was very warmly welcomed in the community. The commercial life in Cross Midland could once again grow after being stagnant for so many years. Roadblocks, army patrols were gone, cross-border trade and commerce could resume, and the community would begin on a road which hopefully would lead to prosperity and inclusion.
How would you compare primary education north and south of the border?
Well, that makes a change from talking about the troubles and so on, but there is a difference. There always has been a difference. As I said earlier, there's five primary schools in the parish of Craigan. There's Cullivale, St Patrick's in Cross, Glasdrummond, Ballinacloshe and Sheila. Sheila is the only one in the south. And the biggest sharing we did was based around Confirmation Day and religious education. Discussions, we would have meetings with the other schools between the different districts, and they were mostly based around confirmation meetings and so on. But at those meetings we also discussed lessons and lesson plans and strategy and wages and all those kind of things as well. Parish meetings were also held on occasions. Concerts were attended by the other schools. If a school had a concert, then we'd attend it, and they would come to ours and so on. Sometimes our concerts were held in Naomh Malachy football grounds, and I have to mention Naomh Malachy here because when I went first, there was a great, vibrant, charismatic priest called Donal Sweeney, and I can remember having a meeting in the school with Donal Sweeney and other members of the community and setting up a committee to begin the new club rooms in St Malachy's, in Naomh Malachy, where it now stands. That committee went on to form the nucleus of the club, even though the club itself existed long before that, but it brought the strands of the community together through the football club. It was a great focus, and it steered the community in what I believe was the correct way through the troubles. But anyway, sometimes we had our concerts in Malachy, sometimes we had them down in Cross Midland. The natural shopping town was Cross Midland. But you asked me about the differences between the education system. Because of the different education authorities, Irish and British systems, there were many differences. In Britain, the schools were better funded. There was no shortage of facilities. They had free books, free meals. Equipment was all provided and replaced when it got worn out. There was a strict requirement, however, in the British system from teachers to put down policy formation, note-taking, reporting, record-keeping, assessments and tests. It took up an awful lot of teaching time, and the whole focus was aimed towards the 11+. It caused stress with children as well. In Ireland, there was a greater emphasis on the curricular areas and much broader approach to child-centred education. It included drama and PE and art. The funding was terrible. But Irish was also taught. The children were encouraged to explore and learn by doing. There was less emphasis on exams. To compare the two systems is very difficult, but there would be a great benefit in taking the best of both worlds. Take the funding from the north and the innovation from the south, and we'd have maybe a perfect system. The Irish system was greatly underfunded. Secondary school begins in Ireland around about 12 or 13 years of age, and the children have that little bit of maturity. In the north, it begins at 11, which is slightly too young. So they would be the main differences as I find it.
your opinion, how will Brexit affect the border region?
Well, that's a big topical conversation here. In the very same way as the roads were closed at the start of the Troubles, we are looking at the same thing happen again. No matter what way it plays out, Brexit will have a huge effect, not only on the border region, but also on Dundalk and Newry and Cross Midland. They are the natural go-to places for the people in this area. It's a 12-minute drive from Cross Midland to Junction 17 on the motorway, on the Castleblaney Road, on the M1. On both sides of the road, there's rows of parked cars. They belong to commuters who have travelled on to Dublin or Belfast by bus or in a carpool and going to work. With Brexit, that will all stop. Immediate family members live within miles of each other, but on opposite sides of the border. Some households draw social welfare and family benefits from both north and south. That'll all end with Brexit. There's at least 20 local children crossing the border twice a day to attend a local secondary school. All of that will be more difficult. But the main thing will be the imposition of post-Brexit tariffs on farm produce. It'll deprive an awful lot of the local farmers north of the border of the competition among the dairies in the south. The prices in the dairies in the south are higher than those in the north, but they will not be able to trade here anymore. The EU Rural Development Fund, down through the years, provided funding for Sheila Youth Club, who went on to win All-Ireland medals and all kinds of things with musicals and one thing and another. Also Colleville, they have dancing classes, bingo classes and all of that. That's all funded by the EU fund north of the border. That's all going to stop. The community centres will be looking for funding. Brexit will spell the end of that funding. 60% of farm produce in Northern Ireland comes south. That's an incredible amount. And 40% of other northern produce also comes south. With tariffs that are imposed on them after Brexit, the tariffs will end all that. So the industry north of the border is going to suffer. But for the southern farmers and businesses along the border, 60% of their markets are in Britain. Now, if they all disappear because of tariffs, then you could have a scenario where the smuggling, customs posts, closed roads, illegal workers all reappear, and it'll send the economy into a downward spiral and a recession. And the peace agreement would also rear its head as being in danger. So it's a huge issue that politics and politicians who are removed from the local economies haven't properly considered. And certainly in Europe, or with Theresa May in Britain, it is far removed from her interests at the moment. But it has significant implications for us here. Tariffs would not apply. Trade from Britain into the EU through Northern Ireland, you would have to stop that. But it is a total mess. It will be a mess. But my attitude is that if there's a will among the community for it to happen, then eventually it will happen. So I hope that answers your question on Brexit.
Thank you, Joe, for your very enlightened story.
Well, I hope you enjoyed listening to me. I still keep a remit and look at education matters around the country, and I'm keenly interested in the politics, but most of all, I am spending a lot of time in my garden, growing my flowers and cutting my grass, and having a nice time playing a wee bit of golf. It was lovely talking to you, Tom.
Thanks, Joe, for sharing your interesting memories with the listeners. My guest next week will be Joe Quinn from Bardenstown, Hackbuzz Cross. He returned from America with his wife Rose in the 1960s and set up a shop in Bardenstown, Hackbuzz Cross. He has many interesting stories to record. Thank you.